This week, we're featuring a holiday series retrospective of some of our favorite interviews with actors and musicians from 2007. Today, we have an interview with Mark Ruffalo. He starred or co-starred in such films as My Life Without Me, We Don't Live Here Anymore, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Collateral, Zodiac, and Reservation Road. He was discovered by critics and audiences in the 2000 film You Can Count on Me, in which he played Laura Linney's troubled brother. We'll start with that film. This was written by Kenneth Lonergan, who was a playwright and screenwriter, and you had worked with him before the movie. And
that's right.
You star with Laura Linney. You play two siblings who, as children, were orphaned when their parents were in a car accident. And you develop in very different waves. She becomes this kind of stable, single mother, you know, raising her child in as good a home as she can manage on her, you know, job in the local bank. Whereas you're really, like, troubled, you're lost, you're drifting, you're broke, and you're needy. And you come to see your sister for the first time in a long time. And this is a scene where you're meeting at a restaurant after not seeing each other for a long time, and you make a confession to her.
I actually got to confess to you, Sammy, that the reason that you may not have heard from me for a while is that I've been unable to write on the account of the fact that I was in jail for a little while.
You were what?
I served a little time, I guess, down in Florida. It was just for bullshit.
What?
It was for bullshit.
What did you do?
I didn't do anything. Does it occur to you that maybe I was wrong?
No.
Well,
could you please let me
tell you what happened?
What happened?
I got into a fight in a bar down in Florida, which I was not the one who instigated it at all. But then it worked up all this bullshit against me, and they threw me in the pen for 3 months. And I didn't write you because I didn't want you to get all upset about it. I just figured that you would figure I was on the road for a little while. It was stupid. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you worry. You know, but you want to know what? I can't run around doing stuff and not doing stuff because it's going to make you worry. Because then I come back here, I tell you about my f***ing traumas, and I get this wounded little I've let you down bullshit over and over again. It just cramps me. I just want to get out from under it. Yeah, back in this f***ing hole, explaining myself to you again.
Please stop cursing at me.
I realize that I'm in no position to basically say anything ever, but it's not like I'm down there in some redneck bar in Florida. I'm having an argument with some stripper's boyfriend, and I suddenly say to myself, hey, this would be a great time to really stick it to Sammy and get myself locked up for a few months.
Hey. You don't write me for 6 months. I don't know where you are. I don't know if you're alive or dead. And then suddenly you show up out of nowhere. You tell me you were in jail.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Sammy. I'm really sorry.
That's Mark Ruffalo and Laura Linney in a scene from You Can Count on Me. That's a really great scene. And that's also really early in your film career, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You just kind of captured a certain, like, you know, like defensive, lost, depressed kind of speech in that?
It's almost like it's an iconoclastic modern brokenness.
Modern brokenness, exactly. Can you talk about, like, getting to that place, doing that scene?
You know, it was introduced to me months, a year before, as a one-act play.
Oh.
That Kenny gave to me. I had no idea it was part of a movie. And we did it for a little one-act play festival. And I was so turned on by the material. It spoke to my youth, people I grew up with, a certain ennui and lost, these very clever, smart, sort of gifted kids who just lost belief. And I saw them all around me. And it was sad because they were in many ways stellar and also but somehow lost their heart along the way. And they were different than the kids who were straight A students and the really well behaved kids, like the perfect kids who were like the models at that time, and these kids were much more interesting, much more original, much more alive in so many ways, but had somehow lost faith somewhere along the way. And that was a big, I felt like a big part of my generation from where I came from, you know. And they were the punk rockers and the artsy people and so on and so forth.
Did you feel like you were in that category yourself?
I was sort of on the edge of it. I didn't have the sort of courage to rebel as loudly and deeply as they did. But I was in it enough to witness it. And all of those, you knows, you like, I mean, it's just, you know, all of that was written exactly as spoken exactly as Kenny Lonergan wrote it. He was a stickler for it. And he was able to capture a whole sort of patois of a certain aspect of my generation. Mm-hmm. And as I've traveled around all my travels, people are like, that was my brother. That's me and my brother. That's the way it seems like it's very American in its nature.
My guest is actor Mark Ruffalo. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actor Mark Ruffalo. His films include You Can Count on Me, In the Cut, We Don't Live Here Anymore, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Collateral, Zodiac, and Reservation Road. Why don't we hear a scene from In the Cut? And, you know, there's this kind of like sexual mutilation murders taking place, and you're investigating them, and one of the body parts is found in front of a beautiful college professor's home, and in investigating her, you also become very flirtatious with her and involved with her. Let's hear a scene, and she's played by Meg Ryan.
You don't remember anything, didn't see anything, didn't hear anything. No cries in the night.
No, I don't remember seeing or hearing anything unusual. And I sleep with the windows open.
Yeah? You do that a lot?
Can you tell me how it happened?
Her throat was cut, and then she was disarticulated. Here's my card. My number's there if you remember anything. Give me a call, all right? Do I know you from someplace?
I don't know.
That's Mark Ruffalo and Meg Ryan in a scene from In the Cut. So what impact did this film have on you? After Hours.
That was a really interesting time.
Well, let's explain a little bit, if you don't mind my mentioning it. This was a period, I believe this is the period, you had a benign brain tumor.
That's correct.
And had surgery for that and had an extended period of recovery. And I think this was the movie you made first afterwards.
Yes, there was a movie called My Life Without Me with Sarah Pauly that I did just before this.
Mm-hmm, okay.
I had a sort of co-starring part in that, but it was really her film. And then this was my next kind of big jump back into acting after, you know, many months of, these kind of side effects and complications from the surgery. And I was very nervous. You know, they go and they tinker around in your head and it leaves you slightly disoriented. And any illness, I think I could speak for a lot of people, it's when you recover from something like that, it leaves you a little... It sort of does a number on your confidence, and you see your sort of your mortality, and so I had fear that maybe I had lost my ability to act. After a brain surgery, you're kind of you're confused. It takes a long time. You know, some cognitive dysfunctions and all that sort of thing, and. I was very nervous, but also very desperate because you fall out of the Hollywood scene, and I really felt like I'd fallen between the cracks, and I was having a hard time getting work and even getting people to meet with me. And you know, by providence, I got a call from Jane Campion that at the time was casting in the cut. And, you know, I had put on 40 pounds from steroids that I was given to recover. And I went in and I met Jane Campion and talked about the script. And it ended up terrifying me, but I also felt very passionate about what I could do with it. And I was also very raw and desperate and kind of vulnerable. And she reacted to that. And then she basically, after 3 hours of discussing the part and arguing about the part in certain places, she asked me to do it.
You know, one of the things I imagine must have been strange doing the part after this period of recovery is, I mean, when you're not feeling well, you don't really want to be seen. You know, you feel vulnerable, you feel kind of broken, and you feel kind of, you know, cut off from the rest of the world in some ways.
Yes.
And to go from that into, like, being on a large screen, you know, blown up, supersized, with people paying attention to your every gesture, you know, every eye blink, it's such a completely different frame of mind. It must be so difficult to go from the vulnerable recovery one to the, like, I am on screen version. Yeah.
Yes, thrust right into the world stage, kind of. And in a way, a lot of that actually worked for the part.
How?
I mean, he isn't a vulnerable guy, but there was something that was edgy and dangerous about me at that time, and very frightened. And a lot of that sort of, I think, manifested itself in that performance, which I'm really, that risk of sounding egotistical, I'm really proud of that performance, you know?
Oh, you should be. It's a very good performance.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And so it meant so much to me on so many different levels that succeeded. It was sort of my chance to come back. It was a chance to break away from this my You Can Count on Me role, Terry Prescott, which kind of broke my career.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, broke me out. It gave me a chance to prove myself as a man and to prove myself as a character actor, which is the tradition that I come from. It had an enormous amount of immediacy and almost a desperation about it that I think really sort of makes that piece special.
Mark Ruffalo recorded in October. We'll hear more of the interview in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with actor Mark Ruffalo. His movies include You Can Count on Me, In the Cut, We Don't Live Here Anymore, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Collateral, Zodiac, and Reservation Road. You know, your career actually got off to a pretty slow start, right? You were a bartender for 9 years while you were trying to act. So what was one of the highlights of your bartending years? What was one of the most difficult incidents you had to handle?
I had a friend of mine start a fight in the bar, and it was mostly all the highlights were the bar fights. Really, those were sort of the man making moments of a pacifist, peace lover, peacenik like myself. I went into bartending very timid and very afraid, and I walked out of it a little bit more of a man.
What's a fight? Did you have to actually break up fights yourself?
I had to. I mean, one guy like really started to get physical with somebody, and I don't know why I did this, but I just he was much bigger than me, and I really knew I basically grabbed his windpipe and dragged him out of the bar, and you know he was threatening to kill me and all these things, and it was really out of control, And it was terrifying to me, but I was, you know, it was just one of those moments where something else kicks in that's survival oriented. And but it was horrible as well, and I didn't like that I did that, and I sort of, you know, and I didn't hurt him ultimately, but it did stop him immediately, and it stopped this whole what was turning into an incredibly ugly bar fight.
Did the fact that you could do that give you confidence that you could handle roles as, for instance, cops?
It opened up this thing that I could handle myself in that situation. I got into a fight when I was a little kid, and it must have only lasted a couple minutes, but it felt like an eternity, and I hated every second of it, and I was very terrified of confrontation from that moment on, and then here I am. As a young actor struggling and closed down to fearful of confrontation, which all modern drama is based on.
Right.
And I was able to sort of break through it, you know, and actually I felt like, okay, you know what, I have that in me. I mean, I can do that. I can play those parts. I could... I can access that, you know.
So that bartender thing was a good experience for you in the long run.
Well, I mean, it was, you know, the whole bartending thing was the last place. You know, I'm reading Rilke, and you know, and Pablo Neruda's love poems, and then going to this really rough and tumble bar every night. And doing a play and passing out my little playbills and with all these guys, some of them were heroin addicts, some of them were just like never read a book in their lives, you know, and here I was straddling these two worlds, and it was very tough. I mean, a guy got killed outside our door one night, a gangster, and there was some retribution. We were asked to wear bulletproof vests and...
Gee.
You know, it couldn't have been in many ways a more of like a crash course in just the macho manly world of testosterone.
Now, I think you started a theater company, the Orpheus Theater, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Me and a group of young actors that I went to acting school with all got together, and we were at the Stella Adler Conservatory, and they had the school stage sitting empty every night. And so I went to the administrator and I said, listen, I want to start a theater company. We should be able to work out, you know, these tools that we've been given. And so we were given Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night on the stage. And that was kind of the beginning of what would be my Los Angeles theater career.
So what was the focus of the kind of theater you wanted to do?
We were doing mostly, we were doing some Chekhov. We did some, we did Long Day's Journey Into Night. We did some Tennessee Williams. They were kind of American modern classics, some of them. And then we'd try and dabble with some Shakespeare and, but a lot of it was the stuff that Stella was sort of teaching at the time, which was a lot of the American classics or world classics, modern classics.
It must be great to start your own theater company, because that way you can – it's a small group and you give yourself parts. You decide what you want to do, I mean, and you give yourself parts. You're not dependent on somebody else to confer acting on you.
Exactly. And I could do a $5,000 production, a $2,000 production of Misalliance, or I could do a $2,000 production of Waiting for Godot, no one came.
You got the experience.
Yes, but I got to play some of the greatest parts for a young actor in you know, the history of world theater. So
that was, you know, I worked it out on a stage in front of a very, 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 very small group of people.
My guest is Mark Ruffalo. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actor Mark Ruffalo. His films include You Can Count on Me, In the Cut, We Don't Live Here Anymore, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Collateral, Zodiac, and Reservation Road. You know, a little earlier when we were talking, you know, we were talking about You Can Count on Me and In the Cut as being the movies that you made after emerging from an extended period of recovery after having surgery for a benign brain tumor. Would you mind if I just asked you a couple of questions about that period?
No, shoot.
What were some of the things you had to regain when the surgery was over?
Well, certainly balance was immediate. I lost my hearing in my left ear, and so my balance was completely shot. You know, so I was falling. It was actually comical. I was just falling down all the time for the first couple of months. Walk a few steps, fall down. And then, you know, every hour you're under anesthesia, they say it's a month of recovery. So that's 10 months right there. And they say you have cognitive dysfunctions, which, you know, can be simple things like finding your way home from one side of Washington Square to the other, which I got lost doing one night.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, kind of abstract sort of processes, these kind of abstract creative ideas seem to get a little muddled as well. So there was a time of kind of getting myself back, you know, getting your sense of self, sense of independence, sense of, you know, I had to completely basically give my life over to my wife at the time.
What about things like facial expressions that are so important when you're acting?
Well, I had, during the course I had of recovery, my face miraculously became paralyzed on the left side of my face.
Hmm.
And no one seemed to really know exactly why that was happening. They pretended like they did for a little while. And then slowly but surely I caught on to the fact that they had no more of an idea than I did. And they tried a bunch of different things, and it didn't seem to be coming back. And, you know, there was some speculation that it wasn't going to come back at all, or it was only going to come back 20-30%. And as an actor, just starting my career, that was pretty devastating news with a newborn and recently married and you know, everything ahead of me in so many ways. And so a big part of the recovery was praying, hoping, going to healers, doing all kinds of therapies.
Did the tumor and the period of recovery force you to change certain patterns of behavior or ways of acting that you wouldn't have otherwise given up, but in the long run, like, you're happy you were forced to change?
Yeah, I mean, I was someone who's always prone to deep, deep depressions, and those seem to come to an end. I mean, the length of them certainly did. That's something that I'm very grateful for. Also,
but you don't get them anymore?
I get them, man. Believe me, I get them. But I don't slide down the well the way I used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned to appreciate acting in a way that I didn't really understand what it meant to me at that time.
What does it mean to you different now than it did earlier?
It's kind of my way to be fully realized as a human being. I feel like, you know, it's my relationship to the world that is that's just gonna you know, make my life sort of as full as it could possibly be.
Were you afraid after you recovered that other like casting directors wouldn't believe that you were fully recovered and they'd be afraid to hire you?
I heard someone was like, "We heard you had AIDS. We heard you were in rehab. We heard you're an alcoholic." I mean, it just went on and on and on. And yeah, I mean, you're damaged goods. I even today I don't like to talk about it, but because it's you, Terry, I will.
I appreciate that.
Because I know you'll handle it well. There's a perception in our culture where if you're ill, you're damaged. You go to the damaged goods box,
mm-hmm.
with the toys, the misfit toys, and that was frightening to me. And I also people sensationalize these things into making it. Oh, it's the actor with the brain tumor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the actor with the brain tumor. I'm much more than that. And any person who's been ill is much more than simply their illness. So, it took a long time it didn't take as long as I thought it was going to, but it took a long time to sort of get back into the groove that I was in before the brain tumor.
There's some roles that you've had in the past few years that are more kind of like the existential guy, the guy who, you know, I'd say this maybe even about like Zodiac, you know, the detective that you play. Mm-hmm. He's kind of obsessed in everything, but there's a distance from emotion, a fatalistic quality, accepting that life is dark and difficult, and that that's just the way it is.
Well, someone who's much brighter than me, and I'm going to rip off his quote, the joyful participation in the sorrows of the living. That's Joseph Campbell. And, I don't know why I see that. I have a lot of empathy for the human race,
mm-hmm.
and its march through time, and its connection to suffering and hardship and difficulties, as well as joy and the beautiful things in life. And that's there's something very poetic to me about that. And so maybe I'm attracted to that when I see it. It's something that I'm always slightly aware of. There's just the epoch nature of our existence. That spans many, 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 many decades, centuries, where the human experience is universal, universally sort of riddled with difficulty and exaltation, and so part of me poetically sees that. So maybe that's I admire it and revel in it in a way. And so maybe that's, maybe that's what you pick up on mm-hmm. in some of the work, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's just a completely different question.
Okay.
I know your mother is or was a hairdresser, and you have a couple of siblings who became hairdressers.
Yeah.
So
when
you're getting like your hair and makeup done for a role, can you converse with the person doing it on a real like technical level because you grew up with it?
They hate me. Because I'm like, okay, you know what? Get the thinning shears out. I'd go with the quarter inch thinning shears here, right up in here. Just to look. Actually, can I just give them to me? I'll do it. And I mean, I know they hate me, and it would be like me giving people line readings. Okay? A director giving an actor a line reading. I grew up in it. I watched it. I've been around it. And I've had many, 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 many haircuts. So it's kind of funny. I know when I work on a movie, I end up at some point cutting my own hair to everyone's horror.
What movies have you done your own hair for?
I cut my hair for In the Cut.
Uh-huh.
I cut my hair for Eternals. The more
you kind had a mustache on in the cut too.
Yeah, that's right.
Was that your idea? Was it?
Yeah, well, I wanted it, and there was a lot of fighting going back and forth between Jane and the producer. Like, nobody likes a man with a mustache. And I was like, he has to have a mustache.
Why does he have to have a mustache?
I was hiding behind it, you know. Uh-huh. It was my disguise, I think, to get it to be able to inhabit that guy without being self-conscious, I think. Maybe.
So you think you needed it more than he needed it?
Probably, yeah. And then yeah, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is a pretty wild hairdo. I cut that too. I mean, and eventually someone else comes and cleans up the mess I make. But those are some.
Well, Mark Ruffalo, it's really been great to talk with you. I really like your acting.
Too.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Terry. It's a real pleasure and honor to talk to you.
Mark Ruffalo recorded in October of 2007.